The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Counties Reimagined. Lee and Harnett counties are growing their communities at their own pace, thereby offering new residents and companies unique choices. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Strength in Numbers. Despite Harnett and Lee County sitting right next to one another, the two communities differ both in their demographic makeup and where they stand on their respective growth trajectories. Written by Evan Hoopfer. Oscar Gomez has worked in big cities such as Houston and Miami, but wanted something slower, so he moved to Harnett County, the town of Anger, and has been running Jabez Floristry on Broad Street for 9 years. We came here and it looked like a promising little town, Gomez says. It wasn't looking like a lot going on. It wasn't dead, but you could see potential. Now, that potential is arriving. Since first opening his store, Gomez says business has doubled as more people flock to the town. It's a familiar story in two counties just to the south of the Triangle, Harnett and Lee. Both are benefiting as the Triangle swells with growth, and the counties on the region's rim see a rise in residents and opportunities. And despite Harnett and Lee County sitting next to one another, the two differ in their demographic makeup and their growth trajectories. Harnett County is home to 136,000 people spread across small towns, none of which crack 10,000 people, sharing a sizable border with Wake County to the north. Harnett is largely a bedroom community for Raleigh, Durham, and Research Triangle Park, and is experiencing a boom in residential development because of soaring land prices in those locales. The county is home to some of the fastest-growing places in the Triangle, such as Anger, which sits just south of the Wake County line. Anger Mayor Bob Smith paints himself as the middleman in the argument of growth at all costs versus maintaining the status quo. Smith wants to get Anger's population, currently at 5,700, over the 10,000 mark so that more investment will come. Let's grow at a good, measured pace and get to the point where commercial interest will come in, Smith says. Just to the west, the story is different in Lee County. The county is half the size of Harnett, with one predominant city, Sanford, home to about 30,700 people, and already has interest from commercial ventures. Over the last decade, city and county leadership focused on bringing more jobs to Lee County, and the strategy worked. Multiple life sciences companies are bringing hundreds of high-paying jobs to Sanford over the coming years, and the city is one of the few rural communities in the state actually growing. In the past, before the roads were improved, we were sort of a faraway place. We had to sustain ourselves on our own, says Chet Mann, mayor of Sanford, from 2013 up until this August. We couldn't depend on Wake County and Raleigh to pull us through. Anger boom. Sean Johnson, Anger's director of planning and inspections, remembers a time not too long ago when the thought of attracting a 100-plus lot subdivision was unheard of. But ever since 2018, Johnson says, home builders have been circling Anger as the hottest new Triangle suburb. The last few years have seen a torrid pace of growth for the town as it grew its population by 7.5% in just 1 year between 2020 and 2021, according to U.S. Census estimates. The growth will only accelerate during the next few years. We're doing over 200 building permits a year for new homes the last couple of years, Johnson says. We have roughly 3,300 new single-family residential lots in various stages of approval and construction on the books right now. Anger's population today is under 6,000. If all those homes get built, Johnson projects the town's population to swell to around 15,000, and that's not accounting for any additional projects coming to Anger in the future. Residents of small towns are often wary of high-density developments because of the increased traffic they bring, but Smith says it was important for Anger to develop homes with small lot sizes of 6,000 square feet to get its population numbers up. If a beginner couple is coming down from Wake, you need a home that they can afford, Smith says. Next, we'll probably move towards subdivisions where the lot sizes are much bigger. It's part of a process to get the population numbers up, but throttle that so you're not just run away with small lots. Anger's robust growth serves as a microcosm for Harnett County as a whole. The county has attracted hundreds of Wake County residents recently looking for cheaper home prices. According to an analysis by American City Business Journals of IRS and U.S. Census data, 1,000 Wake County residents moved to Harnett County between 2019 and 2020. On the inverse, about Only about 700 residents moved from Harnett to Wake. Christian Lockamy, Director of Economic Development for Harnett County, says about 60% of Harnett County residents leave the county every day for work. He's looking to bring that number down over the coming years by attracting more jobs to the county. One of the struggles is Harnett doesn't have a mega site like Person County or Chatham County, which has two. And those sites lure major companies looking to build new factories with thousands of jobs. Harnett County does have some industrial parks with land available for companies. Edgerton Industrial Park and East Coast Logistics Park are both located in Dunn, and the Western Harnett Industrial Park is located in the southwest area of the county. Together, these parks offer hundreds of acres of available land. A vital piece of road infrastructure in the works will make industrial recruitment easier. U.S. Highway 421 cuts Harnett County in half horizontally. Last year, the road was labeled a high-priority corridor in the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and will one day become I-65, connecting I-85 in Greensboro with I-95 in Dunn. Big manufacturers and logistics companies love being located next to interstates to make their supply chains run smoother. Harnett County will be able to market the coming interstate when recruiting companies, just not yet. The only problem is that the route through Harnett County has not been finalized, and it's preventing us from really getting ahead of that and identifying land out there, Lockamy says, but it's on our radar. For decades, the triangle was defined as Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, but with the population flooding over county lines into places like Harnett County, Lockamy considers his community part of the region. There's no doubt in my mind, looking at the counties that are growing, that we are truly part of the greater Triangle region, Lockamy says. Spreading suburbs. Greenfield Communities out of Raleigh is set to reshape much of Harnett County. The company is working on two enormous housing developments, Serenity and Capeton. Serenity will contain just under 1,200 homes, and construction is slated to start in September, says Matt Brubaker, president of Greenfield Communities. That project is located in northern Harnett County with a Fuquay Varina mailing address. Capeton, located in Lillington, will include around 2,250 new residential units, including apartments, age-restricted homes, cottages, single-family homes, and townhomes. The community boasts 2.5 miles of frontage along the Cape Fear River, and construction is slated to begin in late 2023 or 2024, Brubaker says. Amenities include a grocery store-anchored retail center, and the Capeton Riverfront will include at least one restaurant, boutique retail, a park, a riverfront amphitheater, and a riverfront greenway trail. Brubaker is deeply familiar with the county, being a graduate of Campbell University in Buies Creek. He says if his company bid against national builders for land in Wake and Durham counties, it would get outbid. So they studied the population migration trends to see where the growth was heading. The growth seeping into places like Harnett County is reshaping not just the county's housing market, but the entire Triangle region. Brubaker says the Triangle's residential real estate market has been less comprised of large master plan communities than other high-growth markets like Texas, Florida, and Arizona. But as growth spreads into places like Harnett County, that could change. In those markets, large tracts of land are more common. Historically, you can't just throw a rock in Wake County and have it land on a 2,000-acre tract owned by one family looking to sell, Brubaker says. But with the growth we've seen in the greater Raleigh market, developers and builders have expanded their territory, pushing out to areas that have historically been farmland. I think builders and home buyers would welcome more of these well-planned out amenitized communities. I think you're going to see more master planned communities in the Raleigh market in the coming years. The suburban environment extending south into Harnett County is a boon for institutions like Campbell, says Britt Davis, the university's vice president for advancement. Campbell has multiple locations throughout North Carolina, including its law school in Raleigh, with its flagship location in Buies Creek, home to about 4,800 students and 800 full-time employees. The university also serves as a workforce development hub for the county. For example, Davis says about 40% of Harnett County teachers have a degree from Campbell. Now, the county's modernization with new homes, townhomes, and commercial facilities being developed is helping bring Campbell more into the triangle and could aid in student recruitment efforts. We have really grown from being a school that's out in the country to where the urban and suburban things are coming our way, Davis says. We think it'll be for the better in terms of the population and the people that we're able to serve through our program. Sanford Renaissance. Lee County is in a much different stage of its economic development. We've always been our own community, Mann says. We're not a bedroom community. Sanford is home to one of the hottest job and residential real estate markets in the Greater Triangle, but it wasn't always that way for the city. The city was coined the brick capital of the USA in the 1950s for the amount of bricks local companies produced. Textiles and furniture were other big parts of the economy. As those industries withered in the U.S. due to cost pressure from foreign competitors, Sanford suffered. When Mann took office as mayor in 2013, his last day in office was August 16, he inherited 6 years with a tax base that was either flat or decreasing. Mann says he and other community stakeholders got to work on several different initiatives to bolster the local economy, such as raising public and private money to establish the Sanford Area Growth Alliance, the city's economic development arm. We went from an economic development team of two to now a staff of eight, Mann says. We merged the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development together so they could share resources and created a one-stop shop for economic development. The formation of SAGA paid dividends. Another public-private partnership developed the Central Carolina Enterprise Park, which has attracted hundreds of new jobs to the city. Mann says Sanford is a net importer of jobs. About 5,000 leave the city every day to work, while 8,000 come to Sanford for work. As Sanford started attracting new jobs, home builders started circling the city. Mann says the city currently has 7,500 housing permits issued. Residential building won't come unless you have jobs, he says. For years, we couldn't get the out-of-town developer to come to Sanford. Once we got some of those first job announcements, really, the door has flung open. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Old Chatham debuts new look. Old Chatham Golf Club, which features high-profile members but keeps a low profile, is celebrating more than 20 years with an anniversary celebration this month and a revamped course. Back in 1998, Bob Eubanks Jr., Paul Rizzo, and Rex Teeny of Franklin Street Partners led a drive to build a club with a focus on golf that would connect Triangle business people. The club attracted a number of Triangle leaders who loved playing in an intimate setting whenever they wanted and were willing to pay $50,000 to fund the club. A lot of times, busy executives don't know until the weekend if they can play or when they can play, so we keep the number of rounds played down, President Alan Wilson says. Our promise to you is whenever you want to play, you can come out and play. You don't have to worry about booking in advance. Old Chatham opened September 7, 2001, 4 days before an infamous day in American history. We were going great guns up until then, Wilson says. As a brand new club, we struggled. We did a big assessment to our members, but they paid it and kept it alive. The club had 224 founding members, including UNC Chapel Hill basketball coach Dean Smith, and now has 385 members, with 282 of them local. The group includes business leaders, 9 members of the Carolina Hurricanes, UNC football coach Mac Brown, and country music star Eric Church. Michael Jordan also plays the course a couple of times a year. Wilson says the club usually adds about 8 to 10 new members per year. Initiation fees are now $85,000. Smith's fierce competitiveness on the course is still remembered. Wilson says Smith was once playing with John Montgomery, the head of the Rams Club, and against UNC's assistant basketball coach Bill Guthridge and lacrosse coach Willie Scroggs. When Montgomery had a 6-foot putt, Smith painstakingly analyzed the breaks and gave his partner extensive advice before an exasperated Guthridge said, "Dean, my gosh, you've been overcoaching for 40 years. Just let the guy make the putt." The club planned to celebrate its 20th anniversary last year, but COVID delayed that. This May, the club launched a major revamp, switching from hybrid Bermuda to Mach 1 hybrid Bermuda for the new greens, converting the fairways and tees to Zorro Zoysia. "We were seeing some mutations in the green. Some of the blades were getting larger, and that was starting to affect the roll of the ball," Wilson says. "You need a premium experience. We need our greens to be perfect." The par 4 at number 16 was toughened to strengthen the finishing holes, among other alterations. The club reopened September 29th for the founding members and then holds a full celebration September 30. The club also commissioned a glossy book to preserve its history for new and future members. "It really is a sanctuary for successful people who want to get away and relax around the game of golf," Wilson says. First restaurant opens in Carrie's Fenton Project. Fenton's first restaurant is now open in the sprawling new development in Cary. Though the Fenton team hosted its grand opening in June, many of the center's retail and restaurant tenants have yet to open. Steve Palmer's much-anticipated concept, Coletta, is now serving dinner under the helm of Chef Oscar Nappi. The restaurant is the third in the market for Palmer's Indigo Road Hospitality Group. He opened Oku Sushi in 2018 with Oak Steakhouse following shortly after. Coletta is an upscale casual eatery serving classic Italian-American dishes, including Joyce Farms' chicken parmesan, and for-the-table options like veal chop, pizzaiola, and lasagna bolognese. The menu also features craft cocktails like espresso martinis and classic desserts like ricotta zeppole. The 4,000-square-foot space has 120 indoor seats with an additional 60 outside. The restaurant will add lunch and brunch service in the coming weeks. The Fenton restaurant lineup includes Ford's Fry Tex-Mex concept, Super Rica, Scott Crawford's version of his beloved steakhouse, and Durham chef Mike Lee's second M Sushi restaurant. Southeast North Carolina gets new area code. With the influx of residents moving to the Southeast North Carolina, the region is slated to get a new area code. With the 910 area code close to reaching capacity, a new area code, 472, will soon be assigned, according to the North Carolina Utilities Commission. The new area code will cover in Fayetteville, Jacksonville, Lumberton, Wilmington, and the military installation of Fort Bragg. The North American Numbering Plan Administrator expects the 910 area code to be completely exhausted in the first quarter of 2023. Raleigh gets high marks for places to retire. Why retire at the beach when you can retire in Raleigh? That's the surprising take of a new study listing the best retirement cities in North Carolina. The study by Clever Real Estate bypasses the beach entirely, listing the top five as Asheville, Hickory, Chapel Hill, Greensboro, and Raleigh. The report calls out Raleigh's lower-than-average property tax rate and Chapel Hill's retirement home options. It notes that retirement homes in Chapel Hill receive an average of 3.57 stars on Yelp, higher than the national average of 3.11. Duke in top 10 on Forbes ranking. Research universities in the Triangle area earned high marks in Forbes' annual list of the top U.S. colleges. Duke University landed at number 9 on the list of 500 institutions released August 30th. For the list, the publication evaluated schools based on factors such as alumni salary, student debt, and graduation and retention rates, the latter of which both exceed 95% at the school in Durham. UNC Chapel Hill and NC State University also landed in the top 100, with UNC ranking number 28 and NC State at number 70. With its spot, UNC is among the top 10 of all public colleges and just outside of the top 25 of all research universities in the U.S. Other universities to make the cut include number 50 Wake Forest, number 69 Davidson, number 186 Elon, number 252 UNC Charlotte, number 301 Appalachian State, number 393, UNC Wilmington, number 431, East Carolina, and number 482, UNC Greensboro. And finally, we have a number, 445,000. That's how many shares of PHE stock Phil Harvey owned when he died in December. PHE is the parent company of Adam and Eve, the adult products company Harvey founded in 1971. The fate of those shares is now in the hands of the North Carolina Business Court. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity, written by Connie Gentry. About this project, the Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges relating to environmental, social, and governance issues, or ESG. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. The headline on this week's is The New Asset Class, How Leeline Renewable Capital Will Grow Solar and the Battery Storage Sector in Its Portfolio. If you had asked Eric Lynch at the beginning of last month what his company was focused on, he'd have said maintaining the status quo, investing in technologies for renewable energy projects, primarily in solar, along with some wind and battery storage, and heavily focused on the earlier growth capital phase of development. Since 2019, Leyline Renewable Capital has made more than 60 loans, totaling $300 million, and current investments total $152 million across 96 projects, in a portfolio that is 75% solar or battery storage projects. Today, Leyline CEO has a broader focus, fortified with renewed confidence by the August 16 signing of the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA. With the passage of the IRA bill, not only are we looking at how we can double down, triple down on solar, we're also wanting to do more in the battery storage sector. Battery storage got a massive investment tax credit, 30% for 10 years under the IRA bill, which is taking that whole sector to prime time, Lynch says. In the next 3 to 6 months, we'll be looking more closely at raising capital for EV charging opportunities, green hydrogen, and carbon capture, things that have significant tax benefits under the IRA that will warrant our time and energy. Money was already pouring into the renewable sector with increased fervor. In the first half of this year, investments in renewable energy reached $226 billion globally, an 11% spike over the first half of 2021, and an all-time high for the start of any year, according to Bloomberg NEF's Renewable Energy Investment Tracker. Interesting to note, financial commitments from venture capital and private equity groups soared 63% year over year, topping $9.6 billion, while new equity raised through public market investment actually declined comparably, down 65% compared with the first half of 2021, coming in at $10.5 billion in 2022. The vast majority of 1H 2022 investment, $206 billion, was for project development. Additionally, there was a 27% uptick in investment for new large-scale solar projects across the first 6 months of this year, all of which bodes well for developer-centric financial groups like Leyline. The early stage of investing in projects like solar is well understood now. The risks have come down and the returns are very healthy compared to actually owning the project, Lynch asserts. In 2018, when he and Eric Rubenstein began raising funds for what became Leyline Renewable Capital, it was a different story. Rubenstein is Leyline's chief investment officer. Thinking of the need for capital in the development stage of a project, it's the hardest capital to get. It's the riskiest capital, and lots of people will give you capital when you're ready to start construction or operations of a project, but when there's still a lot of risks and unknowns, it's tough to get capital, Lynch says. With that in mind, they started Leyline in August 2019 with a $150 million commitment from New Light Partners, which had spun out of the Strategic Investments Group at Soros Fund the previous October. We're always focused on renewables, on climate change and greenhouse gas reduction, either directly or indirectly. I say indirectly because battery storage supports more renewables. More solar and wind can come on the grid if we have batteries to help stabilize and provide power at night when there's no sun, Lynch says. Texas is a prime example, he adds, noting that state's extreme energy prices alongside a geography ideal for renewable energy. They've got a lot of land, a lot of sun and wind, and a lot of that wind is blowing with the energy when the energy is not needed, so you actually see negative pricing at certain times. If you store that wind power in batteries and dispatch it when needed, you can have a positive impact on the cost of the power, and it's coming from a renewable resource, Lynch says. Texas is currently ranked number 2 in the country for the amount of solar energy produced, and if growth projections from the Solar Energy Industries Association hold true, Texas will be ranked number 1 in 5 years. Conversely, North Carolina is ranked number 4, but the association projects the state will fall to number 18 by 2027 if growth in solar energy is not escalated. Leyline works with developers and investment partners around the country, including a recent $10 million commitment to Charlotte-based Solterra Partners, which has utility-scale solar projects throughout North Carolina. With this investment from Leyline, we're expanding to unregulated markets outside of North Carolina, including other states around the Carolinas and in the Midwest, says Dennis Richter, president at Solterra Partners. We don't deal with residential or rooftop solar. It's all ground solar farms. In North Carolina, the utility scale is typically 20 MWs, megawatts, and up, and the projects are tied to Duke Energy. By expanding outside the state, Richter expects to develop a more robust pipeline with larger projects, 600 megawatts to 1 gigawatt. He worked in real estate development, primarily shopping centers and mixed-use projects, before the Great Recession led him to solar farms. Having been in the real estate industry, we focus on the development side of the process, identifying a property, typically to lease, and identifying the utility or transmission lines that have the capacity to hold renewable energy. We pull all of the pieces together, the landowner, local jurisdiction, state and federal regulatory agencies, and then come up with a plan to interconnect the system, Richter explains. At Leyline, the mission extends beyond renewable energy to fully integrated environmental and social justice, and business partners are chosen as much for their commitment to improving equity as for their potential to produce positive financial returns. It's a mission that aligned perfectly with minority-owned Vault Energy Utility, a Leyline partner based in Washington, D.C. Many corporations have been taking aggressive measures to reduce their carbon footprints. Now, it's rare to see a major company that does not have an ESG focus, says Gilbert Campbell, Vault CEO, adding, Vault and Leyline have created business partnerships that reflect our goals to contribute to a clean energy future, a fairer and more just environment for underserved communities, and a pipeline of minority talent for expanding professional opportunities in the renewable energy sector. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Finance and Airlines page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Marriage allows firms to boost fintech tools. Raleigh-Durham fintechs combine to prop banking center. A pair of Triangle fintechs are combining as Raleigh-based Constellation Digital Partners buys out Durham-based WalletFi. The real thing that I'm excited about is the opportunity to say an exit happened here between two fintechs, says WalletFi co-founder Mark Miller, whose employees all join Constellation with the deal and, quote, get to experience a real exit, unquote. That's something they can build upon for their future, Miller says. Chris Kovacs, CEO of Constellation, says it's an exciting marriage as WalletFi was one of the first fintechs on its platform, which allows credit unions and digital banks to add fintech services to their offerings. We work with them, he says. We have clients who are live with them on our platform. Knowing the product, being able to see it in action, we knew for sure it would be a good add to the core digital banking services for Constellation. The pain point. WalletFi started as a company that would automate the moving process from getting your mail moved to your utilities hooked up. It quickly evolved into helping people make sense of their subscriptions. Today, WalletFi manages and tracks transactions so credit unions and banks can know their customers better. You get a bank statement. It's all these numbers and characters you don't really know, Miller says. It tells you something about the customer. What you learn there builds a better story. Customers want relevance, and that's where WalletFi comes in, he says. I think where financial institutions have gone wrong in the past is you get ads, emails all the time for services that don't apply to you, Miller says. We're now able to take this ability to bring personalized, specific recommendations to the members that apply to them. Financial terms of the deal weren't disclosed, but Miller says WalletFi employees had equity. Avalo Airlines journey filled with challenges. The CEO of travel startup Avalo Airlines didn't intend to launch the new company during a pandemic, but that's what happened when the ultra-low-cost carrier took off for the first time in April 2021, as the airline industry was just barely back on its feet after being crushed in 2020. Bad luck, CEO Andrew Levy said about the timing. But Avalo is pushing through, and that includes making big bets on Triangle Air Service. In August, Avalo, based in Houston, Texas, announced new nonstop service from Raleigh-Durham International Airport to Fort Myers, Florida. It will launch in November, its second RDU flight, joining service to New Haven, Connecticut. Levy is careful to say Avalo is not a success story yet. Our story hasn't yet been told, he said. We're still early in our journey. We have a lot of work to do. We've come a long way, but we're still dealing with challenges here. His advice? Trial and error, followed by data. Avalo is about to survey its customers to figure out who they are, what they're doing, and why they're doing it. As with any startup, product market fit is essential, and you can't know if it's sticking without data. As for Raleigh, Levy says it's been a really strong market, and if the data keeps showing demand, There's a chance the airline could add additional service down the line. North Carolina loses another project to Virginia. A drone company planning to provide aerial deliveries for Walmart has picked Virginia over North Carolina for a 655-job headquarters and R&D expansion. DroneUp, which provides drone flight services, picked its existing headquarters in Virginia over competing sites in North Carolina, Arizona, Texas, and New York, according to an announcement from Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. It wasn't immediately clear how far along the company was in negotiations with North Carolina. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Nicole Lowe, founder of career coaching startup Zoe. After launching a $500,000 Seed 2 round, Lowe is one of several entrepreneurs launching small fundraisers to be proactive in the midst of economic uncertainty. It's just to give us a little extra runway and to put a little gas in the marketing over the next few months. And finally, a big number, $3 million. Amount of funding received by Green Places, a 15-employee ESG startup from 20 investors, according to a securities disclosure August 24. Green Places technology looks to calculate a small business's carbon footprint. It can then help companies figure out how to reduce their emissions, something regulators keep putting more and more emphasis on with each passing month, increasing the demand. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Greenville Gaming Unit charts office complex. Grover Gaming's new 200-job HQ campus advances. A major employer in Greenville was given the green light recently to develop a new headquarters campus in the city. The Greenville City Council approved a rezoning for 48 acres along Charles Boulevard to allow for the development of an office complex for Grover Gaming. The land sits on the south side of the city and is mostly surrounded by single-family homes. Grover Gaming is a software development and design company founded in Greenville that makes video games played in casinos and other venues. In December 2020, the company was awarded up to $4.6 million in state incentives to develop a new headquarters in Greenville and remain in the city. At the time of the expansion announcement, the company said it would create 200 jobs over 5 years. Representatives from the company spoke before the Greenville City Council last week about preliminary plans to develop the new headquarters campus. Under the new zoning classification, the company could build up to 300,000 square feet of office space on the land. However, Justin Malarkey of Malarkey Real Estate Group tells the city council, "Our intention is to not build 300,000 square feet." The application did not provide any architectural details or sketch out a timeline for the development of the campus. Grover Gaming did not respond to a request for comment. "This site will serve as the headquarter campus for our entire organization," says Mark Downing, chief counsel of Grover Gaming, during the meeting. "I stress campus because this will not be a normal office complex or park. We intend on keeping as many trees as possible, if not all, and adding more." And there is a number along with this article, 415. The number of employees at Grover Gaming, about 250 of those are located in Greenville and Pitt County. PA firm eyes Wilson for 250-job facility. A biotech manufacturing company is expanding to Wilson County with a new facility that will create 251 new jobs. The company, ABEC Incorporated, is based in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and provides engineered process solutions and services for biotech manufacturing, a flourishing industry in the Triangle. ABEC's expansion in Wilson supports the long-term growth of the biopharmaceutical industry, says Scott Pickering, ABEC CEO and chairman. The 50,000-square-foot facility will include state-of-the-art manufacturing equipment, attracting bioprocess expertise and technical talent to join the ABEC team, he says. ABEC Incorporated also considered sites in Pennsylvania and Springfield, Missouri, according to information provided by the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The company is receiving a job development investment grant from the state for up to $2.008 million spread over 12 years, providing the company hits certain hiring and investment thresholds, and another $372,000 from the North Carolina Community College System. Wilson County and the City of Wilson are contributing $370,000 in local incentives. Apartments proposed for Southern Pines. Hundreds of additional apartments could soon be coming to Southern Pines, one of the hottest towns outside the Triangle, for new residential and commercial investment. The next phase of Morganton Park North was discussed during a recent Southern Pines Planning Board meeting. The project would include 300 new apartments and 20,000 square feet of mixed-use retail and restaurant space across 20.6 acres in an area of town that is rife with new investment lately. And in a section called She Said It, we have a quote from Sherry Wilborn, Person County's Economic Development Director, who is resigning from her role in September. "I applied for the director position because in that season I thought it needed the dedication that would have to come from someone who wanted to serve the county because they loved it. Now I think it is well suited for anyone with a passion for economic development." And finally, a big number, 72.9. The number of acres recently rezoned in Fayetteville for the construction of a development with more than 500 apartments and two cricket fields that will have bleacher capacity of 1,200. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page, written by Zach Ezone. Novartis to shutter Wilson operation. Manufacturing site currently employs about 240 workers. A global pharmaceutical company will close a drug manufacturing site in Wilson that employs more than 200 people. The Swiss giant Novartis says it plans to close the facility operated under its generic drug business Sandoz by the end of 2023. The site employs around 246 people and specializes in the production of oral solid dosage products like tablets and capsules for distribution mostly in the U.S. and Canada. Novartis began a strategic review of its Sandoz business last year, during which it evaluated whether to retain, sell, or spin off Sandoz. This process concluded with the company announcing its intentions to spin off its generic drugs business as a standalone, publicly traded entity. But the fate of the Wilson site is not connected to this strategic review process, a Novartis spokesperson says. The company decided to close the facility before the review began and would have moved forward regardless of the outcome of this process, the spokesperson says, adding employees at the Wilson site have been notified of the plans to shutter the facility. News about the Wilson facility comes amid a broader restructuring at Novartis, which currently employs nearly 600 people in North Carolina. Novartis, with $51 billion in 2021 revenue, is cutting about 8,000 jobs globally as it integrates its pharmaceuticals and oncology business units into one focused on innovate medicines. The company, with 100,000 employees, expects to create $1 billion in cost savings by 2024. Shutting down the site is related to economic pressures in the generic drugs business, and will allow the company's manufacturing network to become more efficient, the spokesperson says. Along with the manufacturing site, the company will close an ancillary office space on Davis Drive in Durham. "To remain cost competitive, it is important to use our sites to full production capacity," the spokesperson says. "In the case of the Wilson site, we have been trying for a while to bring in more volume, but despite all our efforts, not enough options have materialized." In addition to the Wilson manufacturing site, Novartis operates a 170,000 square foot facility in Durham that recently received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to produce a spinal muscular atrophy gene therapy called Zolgensma. Durham Pharma scores $680 million for smallpox drug. A Durham biopharmaceutical company has landed a multi-year deal worth up to $680 million to supply the federal government with a smallpox treatment. Chimerix has signed a contract with the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority for the delivery of up to 1.7 million treatment courses of Tembexa. The Food and Drug Administration approved the drug, which Chimerix developed through a contract with BARDA in June 2021. The drug is considered a potential monkeypox treatment. The execution of this procurement contract between the company and BARDA is a closing condition on a deal Chimerix entered with Emergent BioSolutions earlier this year that will see the latter acquire exclusive worldwide rights to the drug. As part of the contract, BARDA, a division within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, will initially procure 319,000 treatment courses for about $115 million. The 10-year contract includes options for future procurements worth up to $551 million and support for post-marketing activities of about $13 million. million dollars. BioCryst received $7 million boost. A Durham pharmaceutical company has landed about $7 million as it closes out a contract to help the federal government prepare for potential flu epidemics. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has exercised its option to purchase 10,000 doses of an antiviral influenza therapy from BioCryst Pharmaceuticals. This marks the end of a five-year contract the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention awarded the company in 2018. Through the contract, worth $34.7 million, the government agreed to purchase up to 50,000 doses of the company's drug Rapivab to supply the Strategic National Stockpile. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Matthew Roden, CEO of Actis Oncology, on the Boston-based company's expansion into Durham last year. The two-year-old startup recently added $84 million to $72 million it raised last year as it builds out a pipeline of novel radiopharmaceuticals to address common tumor types. The RTP area has clearly enabled our growth and position. Our success is going to run through the RTP lab. And finally, a big number, $92 million. That's how much Vesteron, an ag tech headquartered in Research Triangle Park, has raised in a Series C round after securing an additional $10 million from new investor Grosvenor Food and Ag Tech. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Bromette. No Bull Cowboy Bar opening in Fenton. Patrons at the PBR Cowboy Bar can jump on a mechanical bull. PBR Cowboy Bar, standing for Professional Bull Riders, is making its North Carolina debut in the sprawling Fenton Project in Cary. The concept is a result of a partnership between the Professional Bull Riders Organization and Live Hospitality and Entertainment. 10 locations currently exist, including in the Battery adjacent to Truist Park in Atlanta. Opening in a 4,300 square foot space, the bar will feature a mechanical riding bull, as well as multiple bars, private VIP booths, and a 1,300 square foot patio. The location is set to open in the first half of 2023. Our PBR Cowboy Bar concept continues to expand thanks to staying true to our brand and an extraordinary partnership with Live Hospitality and Entertainment, says Sean Gleason, PBR CEO and Commissioner. To be able to open our first PBR Cowboy Bar in North Carolina, where we recently welcomed the Carolina Cowboys to the new PBR team series, is incredibly exciting for our brand and for our fans. The concept is typically adjacent to sports venues, and the Fenton location will be beside Sports and Social, a concept also by Live Hospitality and Entertainment. Sports and Social will be a 19,000 square foot venue across two levels and will feature a 4,000 square foot rooftop bar, a 42 foot LED display screen, and interactive games. Reed Cordish, principal of the Cordish Companies and CEO of Live Hospitality and Entertainment, says the bar will bring a premier country western entertainment experience to the Triangle. The Cowboy Bar joins a list of announced tenants including Lululemon, Pottery Barn, and Free People. Located near the former Cary Town Center Mall, the development is a partnership between Hines and Columbia Development. After slashing hiring goals, Advance Auto trims earnings outlook. In its quarterly report, Advance Auto Parts cuts its full-year earnings guidance after rising fuel prices and inflation delivered a blow to its do-it-yourself business. The retailer saw its stock fall about 10% after the earnings report. The stock closed August 29 at $170.54 a share, down from $236.78 at the start of 2022. The lowered guidance comes weeks after it informed North Carolina officials it won't meet its hiring goals required to receive state incentives promised in 2018. Advance now estimates 2022 net sales to be $11 billion to $11.2 billion, down from $11.2 billion to $11.5 billion. The company had cash and cash equivalents of $240.5 million as of July 16, compared with $601.4 million as of January 1. We remain relentlessly focused on customer service, parts availability, and reliability of delivery, CEO Tom Greco said. We're confident this will help enable sustainable sales growth, margin expansion, and strong cash returns. Boxyard RTP adding taco restaurant. Jake Wood will open Leroy's Tacos and Beer at Boxyard RTP. Wood, formerly an executive chef at Plates Neighborhood Kitchen, gained popularity last year when he opened his first restaurant, Lawrence Barbecue, in Boxyard. Wood has also opened Lagoon Bar in the development. Leroy's Tacos and Beer will open in January in the former Carburito space. The spot's menu includes birria tacos, shrimp tacos, chimichurri fried rice, poblano cheese dip, and a grapefruit and avocado salad. Wood created a hospitality group to manage the three concepts. Lawrence Food Company, Wood, and his wife, Brandy, are majority owners, with another party acting as operating partners. And in a section called He Said It, entrepreneur Julian Jacobs on opening The Burrow in downtown Raleigh, which will feature weekend markets with local vendors. Jacobs also owns Unorthodox Vintage. I feel some pressure just because I know that rent has to be paid, but there's definitely a need for it. And finally, a big number, 329,000. That's how many square feet of retail is currently underway in the Raleigh-Durham market, according to a new report by CBRE Raleigh. The mid-year retail report shows construction deliveries through the first half of 2022 totaling 229,647 square feet. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Kane plans more North Hills towers. New project would rise next to Advance Auto Parts Tower. Kane Realty Corporation is preparing to build another luxury high-rise in North Hills as the district continues to be transformed. Newly filed site plans with the city reveal the Raleigh-based real estate company is planning a two-tower mixed-use development with over 600 residential units next to the 20-story Advance Auto Parts Tower in the North Hills Park District on the east side of Six Forks Road. Kane Realty has filed site plans for the development at 4006 Market at North Hill Street along the Interstate 440 exit ramp. The development will be a single building with towers holding multifamily, retail, and restaurant space. One tower with 27 floors and one with 23 floors. The project includes 8 levels of structured parking. Phase 1 is slated to start construction next summer and will include the structured parking and the 23-floor tower with 354 units. There's no start date for Phase 2 yet, but Kane Realty is anticipating completion of the entire project 24 months after the start of Phase 1. Phase 2 will be construction of the 27-floor tower with 268 units. Units will be a mix of studio, 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms. Kane officials declined to give an estimated cost for the project, saying it's still early in the design and planning stages. Some retail space may be divided to make room for more tenants if the interest is there and it can be accommodated. The project totals 887,129 square feet. The site plans indicate there will be 142 studio units, 272 one-bedroom, 178 two-bedroom, and 20 three-bedroom units. Community amenities will include typical Kane Realty features such as a pool, club room, fitness center, and co-working space. The property is 2.65 acres and is currently a parking lot, assessed at just under $7 million. Across the street are the Park Central North Hills Apartments and Midtown Plazas to the east. The project is also near Kane's recently completed 36-story luxury high-rise named the Eastern, which has penthouses priced at $7,000 per month and up. Charlotte firm to build Cary development. 7 acres owned by the town of Cary is awaiting rezoning approval to allow up to 130 multifamily mixed-income units as the fast-growing community faces a growing affordability gap. We recognize that there was a need in our housing market for housing that was below luxury and below market rate, says Morgan Mansa, the town's intergovernmental affairs liaison. Lee Cochran, vice president of Charlotte's Laurel Street Residential, says the firm plans to start construction at 921 Southeast Maynard Road by the spring, with an anticipated completion in late 2024. Remake of Chapel Hill's University Place set. The redevelopment of University Place from a shopping mall to a new mixed-use development will begin this month. Florida-based developer Ram Realty Advisors plans a multi-phase project which will include 350,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space, 60,000 square feet of office space, 253 apartments, and up to 150 hotel rooms. Ram Realty did not comment on the timeline and estimated cost. The first phase will include a six-story apartment building located between Willow Drive and the movie theater that's part of the mall. In 2019, Ram Realty submitted plans allowing for up to 850,000 square feet of commercial space, 590 residential units, and 250 hotel rooms. Part of the new retail portion will be for incubator spaces to help support local startups. 20% of the incubator spaces will be for minority-owned businesses, according to Ram Realty. And in a section called He Said It, the quotes from Stacey Anfinson, a residential real estate appraiser and analyst in the Triangle. 30% of our houses have had a price drop, but you go back historically, that's normal in our market, so we've kind of moved to normal on that. And finally, a big number, 91. The number of acres City Plat bought in Fuquay Varina for $16 million to develop a $140 million mixed-use development. The project will include industrial warehouses, flex office space, and possible retail and restaurant space. City Plat is also considering putting single-family homes project or townhomes in the project. And now we turn to Viewpoint to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, The Great Sell-Off Has Started in Real Estate. On August 29, one of the world's largest sovereign wealth funds made a call that may soon open the floodgates for office building sales in the U.S., but it comes with subtle nuance. Singapore's GIC PTE Limited and Florida-based Workspace Property Trust, a privately held real estate firm, decided to buy 53 suburban office buildings for about $1.1 billion. The most important word in the sentence is suburban. That's a bet that reflects institutional investors' believe remote work is here to stay, and now office buildings near residential neighborhoods should become more desirable. If the top brass at GIC and Workspace are correct, that means the COVID-driven work-from-home phenomenon is here to stay. Castle Systems, a company that keeps track of unique scans into buildings by workers, reports office occupancy levels in the 10 largest U.S. cities have neared 45%, the highest since March 2020, but only slightly up from earlier this year. Based on that survey alone, companies are beginning to accept the fact that they may never have all their workers come to the office 5 days a week. In an April 2021 column, I pontificated that suburban retail is going to go through a renaissance as remote workers will get restless staying at home all day and start going to their neighborhood shopping strip to have a beer, play pool, and go to dinner. However, I did not mention office buildings in the suburbs getting popular. The second quarter report from the CBRE Group noted that the office vacancy rate in U.S. downtowns surpassed the suburban vacancy rate for the first time in decades. While this may be true for most of the largest cities in the country, growing metros such as Raleigh-Durham and Austin, Texas, have started seeing that trend as well. For example, during the second quarter of 2022, downtown Raleigh had an office vacancy rate of 13.64%, according to Triangle Business Journal research. But suburban office buildings located in places such as Cary and off Falls of Neuse Road saw vacancy rates drop to 11.26% and 9.5% respectively. But the numbers don't tell the full story. Downtown Raleigh office buildings had far more new leases signed than their counterparts in the past year, with net absorptions of 254,358 square feet. Cary, by contrast, registered 140,335 square feet, and Falls of Neuse had 23,400 square feet of net absorption in the past 12 months. But there is a noticeable shift taking place as absorption rates in downtown properties across most of the larger metros are struggling to keep pace with the numbers from the recent past. If the world's largest real estate investor starts looking at office buildings in the suburbs, One of the largest beneficiaries of that trend would be retail. While parking will be a massive issue to solve because suburban office buildings' parking density is far lower than the downtown parking equation, new restaurants, shops, and walkable landscapes are sure to pop up in the future. Municipalities may soon face a swath of rezoning requests in areas not inside the central business districts, especially if big money is lurking in the background. What remains to be seen now is whether this move is just temporary for private equity and other institutional investors parking their money in a safer real estate haven, or are employers, investors, and workers collectively convinced that people will work far longer at their home than at their office. Let's review this 1 year from now. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene, to read the nonprofit briefs. Event celebrates African American experience. The African American Cultural Festival of Raleigh and Wake County will be held September 2 through 4 in Raleigh. The event kicks off September 2 with African American Cultural Festival Night at the NC Museum of Art, featuring Grammy-winning singer Stephanie Mills and guest Will Downing. More performances follow September 3 and 4 at the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Raleigh. On Fayetteville Street, artists will showcase their wares in a gallery walk, and vendors will showcase their products as well. Food vendors will also be on site. CAP Trust announces gifts to a wide variety of services. The CAP Trust Community Foundation announced it has given to 69 charities across the country for a total of $610,000 from the nonprofit's third annual Giving Day. The foundation is a 501c3 organization that looks to enrich the lives of children. CAP Trust is based in Raleigh. The gifts span the country from the Assistance League of Ventura County, California, to Safe Child in Raleigh, to communities and schools of Cape Fear in Wilmington. CAP Trust Giving Day has been a success in years past, and we're happy that as we grow as a company, we're able to support even more nonprofits this year, said Philip DeYounger, president of the CCF. We're honored to support a diverse group of organizations impacting the lives of children across the country. The foundation has awarded more than $38 million in grants since it was founded in 2007. Group looks to support fathers in Wake County. A group looking to support Wake County fathers held a cooking event August 27. The father-child cooking event for Building Our Nation's Dads, or BOND, served as a kickoff for future initiatives as the group looks to support fathers interacting with their children in positive ways. Founded as Building Our Non-Custodial Dads in 2013 and rebranded as Building Our Nation's Dads this year, BOND's mission is to build and strengthen fathers in Wake County and beyond by providing resources and skill development. BOND aims to increase community engagement by building awareness about program offerings, seeking donations, client referrals, and male volunteers. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.